Good morning. My name is Lori Sutton, and I'm the records manager for the University of California Office of the President. The title of my presentation today is Records Management, What's in It for Information Technology? Today, I will be exploring with you some of my world of records management and what it is for you as a person in information technology. And the first thing I want to do is answer that question is what's in it for information technology? And really, it's reducing risk and cost when no longer retaining unnecessary information. That's what. There's less burden, less to migrate. There's lowering of e-discovery and Public Records Act request costs. So there's all kinds of things that when we do manage our records that we can have some benefits from. Today, I'm going to talk about records retention periods for those records that are most commonly found in the information technology area. I'm going to talk about why keeping everything is not a good idea. And finally, how we can work together to reduce risks and costs for the University of California. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is the records retention periods that are most commonly found in the information technology area. And I want to bring your attention to a tool that we have that where the retention periods for different records are being maintained, and that's at the recordsretention.uclp.edu website. These are the retention schedule. This is the retention schedule that is UC-wide, so it's a system-wide retention schedule. And in that box that I have highlighted in red, there's all kinds of information about the schedule. One of the things is that you'll find out that the records management policies for UC state that the records management committee establishes the retention schedules for the university. And there's a link, if you're not at OP, that will show you who your records management coordinator is from your campus, because the records management committee is comprised of somebody from each one of the campuses. And in my role is to help establish those retention schedules by working with retention periods, by working with the committee and subject matter experts to come up with those retention schedules or retention periods that we have. Also in that box, there's a link to a webinar. I'll just show you where that is. That goes into great detail about how to use the retention schedule. Today, that is not what I'm going to do, but I wanted to point that out to you so that if you wanted to know more about the retention schedule itself, there is this webinar that I did on August 13th when the retention schedule first rolled out in the new tool. So you can look at that, and you'll be able to see how to use the retention schedule. But I really want to talk about those records that I think you're going to find most prevalently in your area of the retention schedule. And you'll see that I have a list here of all kinds of things that I think are going to go that are more relevant to you. I'm going to go through those now so that you're not trying to squint your eyes and see what's there. First thing I want to do is talk about what's in that notes area. And the first note is that the content in any systems, shared drives, collaboration tools, and websites, as well as those systems that we develop in the future, is not covered in what I'm talking about today. Those records are records that fall into other parts of the retention schedule, depending on what it is that they're documenting. And really, the owner of that content should be the one that specifies what needs to be captured and for how long. And in some cases, the content should be returned to the owner for retention purposes. So when I'm talking about those records that you have in IT, in information technology, I'm not talking about the content that belongs to other people. Like I said, in the retention schedule, you'll see the retention periods for those records. And the owner should be aware of those as well. So the first thing I want to do is talk about this first one. And it's really a catch-all that is for those general routine office records that you might have or email that you might have as the project goes back and forth and kind of your working papers kind of thing. That's this particular one here, which the retention period on it is retain records for no longer than 1 year after their administrative use ceases. So let's say that your administrative use for that record was 1 day. So that means you could throw it away that day. You could take a whole year to throw it away. It kind of matches with our email policy in OP, so that's kind of helpful for you. And you'll see I have a note one below, and that is just giving you a description of what that routine means. It's those activities that are related to typical internal operations of an office, including the staffing, the administrative procedures and systems, and communication. So just the typical routine things, not substantive. The next part is really two parts. There's this activity called program administration records, and there's two parts to that. There's an A and a B. The B one I have first, and that's really your operational stuff. And if you look at note number two, it talks about that being documenting your organizational activities, your letters, your memos, notes, transmittals, things that are a little bit higher than the routine stuff that you do. And the retention for that is your 5 years after the end of the fiscal year in which the records are created. The committee has a cutoff date, which is that end of the fiscal year on most of the records that we have. Sometimes when we're talking about academic records, it'll be the academic year. And then I'll say delete or destroy after the retention period has lapsed. That second one, which is A, program administration, those are the records of enduring historical value. And there you would want to coordinate the transfer of those records to the university archives to which your campus has. So in other words, if you were at UCLA, you have a university archives. If you're at UC Berkeley, you have a university archives. And you would coordinate the transfer of those records with that entity when you are no longer needing those records for current operational business. For the Office of the President, under Note 4, you'll see that we actually have a record central repository that Judy Peck manages, and that would be the person that you would be contacting about those records there. And note number three talks about really what we're talking about here, those records of enduring value. They document the establishment, evolution and changes, consolidation, and disestablishment of university departments and programs. So there's very little that's going to go in there. About 3 to 5% of all of the university's records are going to be permanent, and so it would be just a finite group of that. Then there's this other thing here. This is dealing with financial and procurement records, accounts payable, receivable, bank cash handling records that document the payment of bills and the receipt of revenues owed by the university. That has a retained records for 4 years after the end of the fiscal year in which all activity has been completed. But there's this little caveat here about those records that are talking about supporting documentation for sponsored activities. So if you're creating a new system or you're enhancing a new system and you're using monies that is from a contract-specified external money sponsor, like a grant, then you would need to be following this part of the retention schedule, where you would need to have those records for 6 years after the expiration or termination of that sponsored activity. Or if it's any longer than that because of a litigation, a claim, or an audit, then you would need to keep them that much longer. Or if the period in the award document itself is longer than that 6 years, then you would need to maintain them that long. And you can see down there, we actually have a glossary that's attached to the records retention schedule, and it identifies what sponsored activities means. And I just told you that that's really talking about that money that is project funded from a research grant or a contract. The majority of your records are going to be in these next two areas, and you'll see there's an item 9, information technology records, and it talks about what this A is. A is the IT proposals, design, and implementation records. It's a huge, what we call batch, or subsection of a batch, where really this is where a lot of your function is going to be in IT, where you're dealing with people proposing records, proposing systems, you're designing them, or you're implementing them. And it also includes those system enhancements that you do from time of the concept of the change or the establishment of a new system through the completion of that project. And here it says the systems include internally developed systems that we might have and websites as well as vendor systems. So anything that we're doing in that part of our business that you see where we're establishing a new system, we're designing it, we're proposing it, we're implementing it, or we're enhancing it is going to be in this part of the schedule. And you'll see also that the language says these records found in all media, paper, electronic, or otherwise, may include but are not limited to. So this means that any record, regardless of its physical format, it could be on a clay tablet or a napkin, or it can be an electron. Anything, we're talking about those kinds of records. And then there's these bullet points of different kinds of things that we might be talking about there. All the things that you're doing to plan for that system enhancement or that system design. All the prototypes, all those things that you do through proof of concept, those kinds of records are going to be in this batch. Approval for those proposals are going to be in there. The planning of the project to implement or to design it and the management of that project. Your system documentation is going to be in this batch as well. So that includes your business requirements, your functional requirements, your mapping specifications, all of those kinds of things that you would have that show what that system is going to be like. And your quality assurance and change management records are going to be in this batch as well. So those things that you do to test the new system or the enhancement before it goes out, and all the changes that are being requested would fall in this batch. Any schedules that you have for implementation or presentations that you give for change management processes or whatever, and any communication records are going to be in this batch. And there's three different parts of this batch, so I want to go through each one of those separately. And the first one is this proposals and design records for projects that are not implemented. We have a lot of great ideas, but sometimes they don't come to fruition. And you'll see here it says retain those records until the administrative use ceases. What does administrative use really mean? That means how long you need those records to do your day-to-day business. That's what that means. And you see that note 5 again is dealing with those records that are showing how money was spent from a grant. So if you have any of those records, you'd still have to follow that 6-year or after the audit or litigation or claim or the award document retention for those. This next one is dealing with that system documentation, those things that I listed in there for system documentation. And you can see note 6 tells you what those things are. And that is retain records for 3 years after the end of the fiscal year in which the system, the application, or the website is discontinued and all data has been purged according to the specific retention period for those records or successfully migrated to a different system, application, or website. So this one you might have a very long retention period for because some of those systems go on and on and on and on, but you still need that documentation in case you want to migrate it, or just to show that it was done in the normal course of business if it ever comes up for some kind of a lawsuit. So we want to make sure that those records are protected. And again, note 6 tells you what those are. It also says, note 6 doesn't say that. Note 6 says, source code, test strips, test automation, and other intellectual property created while internally developing systems are not included in this group of records. Those are going to be in that program administration records of enduring historical value. Sorry, I got a little confused there. That other bullet that I had shown you earlier showed you the list of the kinds of documentation that we're talking about, and I'll just go back to that for a second to show that to you. Maybe. Maybe not. Here we go. You can see that you've got the system documentation such as business requirements, functional requirements, all of that is what we were talking about in that part of the batch. So back to where we were. Then there's this all other IT proposals, design, and implementation records for implemented projects. That means when it's been successfully completed and implemented, then you would have the retained records for 4 years after the end of the fiscal year in which the project is closed out. So that won't include the source documentation, and that won't include those projects that aren't implemented. And you can see it says see notes 5 and 7 below. 5 is documents used as supporting documentation, again, for those sponsored activities will need to be kept for those 6 years. And then 7, a project is closed out when, 1, the system enhancements or changes have been declared operational and ready for production, and or a project is terminated for any reason. So the retention of retained records for 4 years after the end of the fiscal year in which the project is closed out, that's why I gave you the definition of what closed out really means. The second part of that group of records that you would have are these IT operation records. And so I want to talk about the description of those so that you understand the difference between them and the ones that we just went through where you're designing and implementing systems and enhancements to your systems. So the operation records document those services that are provided to maintain your systems and infrastructure, not just implementing them and starting them out. And they include your internally developed systems and websites as well as those vendor systems. Again, the records are found in all media, and they would include these kinds of things. But, again, it's not limited to that. So you have your system support and service request records. You'd have your contingency records for your risk management plans, your disaster recovery plans, your mitigation plans, and your backup and recovery procedures, your IT asset management records, and your maintenance records, and schedules and reports and other records that document your system's operations. So your performance and use of those systems. I think somebody described it to me as making sure that the tracks are running. Make sure your infrastructure is working. And there's two sections for that as well. There's the IT operation records that document routine activities or superseded contingency or IT asset management records. So your disaster recovery records and your asset records. Retain those for no longer than 1 year after review and analysis requirements have ceased. And then that section one, that other one is anything else that's in this part of the batch. Retain records for 3 years after the end of the fiscal year in which the system, application, or website is discontinued and all data has been purged according to the specific retention period for those records or successfully migrated to a different system, application, or website, or until the infrastructure is obsolete. So those are the areas of the retention period, retention schedule that I think apply to you more than any of the other parts of the retention schedule. The question might come up is, are there circumstances when you should not follow that retention schedule? And the answer is yes, and there's several really important reasons why you wouldn't want to follow the retention schedule. If you know that there's a pending, foreseeable, or ongoing litigation, an investigation, or an ongoing audit pertaining to the records. Also, an Open Public Records Act request. If any of those things are going on, then the records cannot be destroyed according to the retention schedule until those actions have been completed or resolved. And we call that in my field a records freeze. Sometimes you hear it called a litigation hold if it's dealing with lawsuits or a records hold. All of those things kind of mean the same thing, that where the retention periods are suspended and you're sort of in this hiatus of waiting for that activity to happen before you can actually destroy the records. Once that has been completed and resolved, if the retention period has lapsed, then those records can be thrown out. If not, you need to keep them for the length of that retention period. If you know that there is some kind of a law or regulation that is specifying a longer retention period, then that law overrides the schedule. And at that point, you need to contact your campus records management coordinator about that requirement, or me if you're at OP, so that I can work with the records management committee, or they can work with the records management committee to change the schedule accordingly. Laws and regulations come up all the time. It's unfortunately the nature of the beast. So it's easy for us not to know about something that you might know about. So please let us know so we can make those changes. If you have a legitimate business need to retain the records longer than what is prescribed in the retention schedule, then please contact me or your local records management coordinator to identify that need. We'll need to document that. We'll also talk to the records management committee to see if the schedule needs to be changed, as it might be a global business need. So next subject. That's all I'm going to say about the retention period, the retention schedule. Next thing is storage is cheap. Why not keep everything? So this sort of implies why it's really kind of interesting, because people think because storage is so cheap, and I get this comment a lot, why are you still doing a retention schedule at all? That's really tied to paper records. You don't need to worry about all the digital stuff because storage is cheap. Well, with our world of personal computers, electronic mail systems, instant messaging, social media, websites, we're looking at a tremendous proliferation of records. And our ability to locate that information becomes very difficult unless the records are managed. How we conduct our business is also changing. We send out drafts of things, and people send back new drafts, so we have all of these duplications going on, and collaborating for a final product. But we often are so busy that we don't take care of all of those drafts and get rid of them. And then when we leave the university, we've got a huge mess that we're leaving behind. We'll have things on shared drives. We'll have things on thumb drives. We'll have them on CDs. We'll have them on laptops, smartphones. They'll be all over the place in little CD chips there, SD chips, I mean. So sometimes what happens is that end user leaves, and then all of a sudden we have an open records request, a Public Records Act request, or a subpoena, or an audit, and it's hard to find what we need for those. So storage may be cheap, but how much will it cost us to manage it all? That's the real question. Between 95 and 98% of our records do not need to be retained permanently. Some, they have some kind of end date. And is the public going to appreciate us maintaining everything over time? Or will they think of that as a waste of their tax dollars? And really, the big question is, what do I mean by manage it? Is that happening now? That's another question. But manage it means keeping everything accessible over time, migrating everything as systems become obsolete or the storage medium changes, preserving the content, context, and structure of the records over time and space. What do I mean by that? I mean content, you understand what I mean by that. The context, why was that written? Let's look at the example of an email message. We've got all that metadata that shows us who sent it, when they sent it, who received it. That's dealing with context of it, or other records that might be involved with it to help provide why that was even written in the first place. And the structure of the records. I know we've all gone through this where we've migrated from one word processing program to another, and we might have had a spreadsheet, and all of a sudden it's no longer a spreadsheet. So that's the structure. And I say over time and space. Space meaning different systems, different programs, that kind of thing. So how will you know if you've done that? How will you know if you have migrated everything successfully? Will you have somebody there who still works for the university who can interpret the records to validate that they are what they were when they were created? And how about security rights? Those may change over time. How will you know what they were, what they need to be? How are you going to manage that? Here's an example of migration issues that you might come across. This was when I worked for the National Archives. We had a group of PowerPoint slides that we wanted to put on a CD and give to our customers so they would have training right there. And the vendor that we selected put all of our PowerPoint slides into PDF format. So here was this lovely slide in one of the PowerPoint presentations. And when we got the disks back and we were checking them for quality control, we saw this. So who's going to take the time to do that? on everything that we have in our dark digital haystacks. Again, management, what else does it mean? It means producing things for audits, investigations, discovery, and those Public Record Act, Records Act requests. How are you going to know if you have it? And if you have it, you have to produce it. And is there going to be anybody there who's going to be able to interpret the records? And if there's only one if there's more than one copy, how will you know which copy is the official one and the complete one? This has been a problem for a lot of people. When Morgan Stanley was requested by the SEC to provide email, and they couldn't find all of the email dealing with a specific thing for an investigation. So they were fined, or actually the SEC filed an injunctive action against them for failing to produce what they thought were tens of thousands of email messages during an investigation. This happened from December 2000 to July 2005. The settlement for that was $15 million of a civil penalty because they couldn't produce them. Some of you might be saying right now, well, that is the private sector. We work for the public. But one only has to look out at the IRS right now and the EPA to see they are having problems producing their records as well. And today, this morning, I was reading an article that wasn't dealing with just legacy or dark data. It was a story on Next.gov with the headline, FBI can't find files after spending $550 million to digitize them. So we have a real problem with management. This is kind of a nice slide. It came from somebody else. Barclay Blair is renowned in my field for his work on information governance. And he has this nice slide that talks about unstructured information and how it's typically not the product of a single-purpose business application. He says it often has no clearly defined owner. It is endlessly duplicated and transmitted across the organization. Determining where and how unstructured information generates cost is difficult. But this slide shows 10 key factors that drive the total cost of owning unstructured information. These factors identify what organizations typically spend money throughout the life cycle of managing unstructured information, along with examples of elements that typically increase costs, which she calls the cost drivers, and elements that typically reduce costs, which she calls the cost reducers. So he goes on this, and I'm only going to point out a couple of them because of time issues. E-discovery, finding, processing, and producing information to support lawsuits, investigations, and audits. Unstructured information is typically the most common target in e-discovery, and a poorly managed information environment can add millions of dollars in cost to large lawsuits. Simply reviewing a gigabyte of information for litigation can cost $14,000. I want to go down to the storage and network infrastructure and talk about what he says there. The cost of the devices, networks, software, and labor required to store unstructured information. Although the cost of the baseline commodity, a gigabyte of storage space, continues to fall for most organizations overall, volume growth and complexity means that storage budgets go up each year. For example, between 2000 and 2010, organizations more than doubled the amount they spent on storage-related software, even though the cost of raw hard drive space dropped by almost 100 times because we're just keeping so much more. Here's another great slide that he had that talks about e-discovery and the ratio of how many documents you find for litigation and how many are really relevant. And he has the ratio of being one relevant document to every 1,044 documents. It is indeed similar to that, looking for that needle in that haystack. But finding that needle can be so very costly. I mean, who reviews those 1,044 documents to find the one document that's needed that might be relevant? Probably an attorney. How long does that take? And how much are they being paid an hour for that kind of thing? This can be very expensive. And here's the actual quote about the gigabyte of information for litigation can cost $14,000. That's why I say let's not keep everything and start to manage our information. So the next, that last thing I want to talk about is how we, IT and records management, can work together to reduce risk and costs for the university. First of all, I think we need to have some definitions because we don't talk the same language a lot of times. You might talk about archive as a verb. Now, I've heard a lot of different IT folks throughout my career because I've worked in different places talk about archiving, and they've meant something else from each other even. One group used the term to mean taking records offline. Another group was to provide a backup. I even had one CIO that told me it meant getting rid of the records completely and deleting them. So I'm going to use it to say backup or to take things offline is the majority of the things that I've heard. An archive in records management land is really archives. And that can mean the records that have enduring value, that are preserved and retained permanently. And most often in a repository that requires, that acquires them and manages their preservation and access. So that's what I'm talking about when I say archive. Archives. Record. In the IT world, when you're talking about a database, you're talking about a complete item that has all these different fields in it that you fill out. In records management, it's any item, regardless of physical form, that qualifies as a record. And in our records management policies in RMP 2, there is a definition. It's quite long, but I've given you part of it. And that is any writing, regardless of physical form or characteristics, containing information relating to the conduct of the public's business, prepared, owned, used, or retained by an operating unit or employee of the university. So that's what I mean when I'm talking about records or a record. It's important to build good record-keeping practices into systems. The involvement of the records manager in the design of new systems is essential. This will help to ensure that records are identified and methods are used to capture fixed records to provide evidence of an activity. The records manager can help articulate what systems and rules are needed to ensure those records are captured and maintained, how long the records should be kept to meet business and other requirements, which is your retention schedule, how they should be stored, and who should have access to them. In UC, we also have the security people, information security people, that have a lot of the same kinds of knowledge base as records managers do about is security and privacy. So that's the wonderful thing about the fact that we all interlap so much. So these are some of the rules that we should have here. And these business rules that dictate what is a record, how and when records will be created or captured, because sometimes we get them, we don't always create them, how they'll be maintained and used, and for how long need to be built into new systems as they are being designed or systems that are in, just being enhanced. Too often, systems have been designed without any record-keeping requirements, and valuable records that protect the rights of citizens provide evidence of our accountability to our public and our other stakeholders, and document specific and significant historical events have been lost. Sometimes this lack of record-keeping requirements has caused records that need to be destroyed to be kept longer than required. The cost of managing and storing those records, as I've mentioned before, places an unnecessary financial burden on valuable and scarce public funding. So here's some things to show you. We talk about capturing records. As I have gone through and done the retention schedule, I have heard many people say to me, you know, we used to have those records, but then we had them digitized by a vendor, or I had that microfilm and I had it scanned by a vendor, and we got them back and we destroyed those other records, and now that we're looking at the actual records, they aren't legible or we can't find them. Records management and information technology need to work together to help users in their electronic record keeping needs. Everyone wants to go digital, but they're moving too fast. They're scanning everything and anything instead of making it a process without any guidance. And this opens the university up for risk. Here's one example, like I said. This is not an example that you see, but I've seen this happen. This is Maricopa County when I was the records manager in Arizona, where they were scanning everything at the recorder's office and putting it online. And you'll find that there's people's medical information up there. There's stuff that has their social security numbers in it and their addresses and everything else, anything that would be enough to help them get their identity stolen. No consistent guidance is provided to users regarding needed policies and procedures to guide records creation. System documentation focuses more on how the application was installed rather than on the way information is collected, shared, and stored. By working together, we can guide them in the classification and maintenance of information as records so that we don't have this digital hoarding that goes on. You can see on this slide I talk about, there was an article in the paper that talked about 1,000 terabytes, a petabyte, has the unnecessary cost of $2.5 million per year. Because when you talk about the office worker and the storage, the overhead, and all the technology that's involved with all that dark data being maintained, that's how much it's costing. So here's some of the record-keeping requirements that I think we need to consider. What records need to be created and or kept that document the functions and activities? I think these things should be considered. What is necessary to capture? Just because this is the way we've always done it doesn't mean that it's the way that we need to do it. Who will rely on that information? Will it be necessary to provide a fixed record of what was relied on or make decisions by the organization? Will it be necessary to provide a fixed record of what was relied on to make decisions by the organization's stakeholders or the general public? How will the information be verified for authenticity, completeness, and accuracy before it is captured into a fixed record? Is an outside contractor being used? If so, will the inputs need to be captured as received from the stakeholders? How will the information be verified for authenticity? How long will records being received and created by the contractor need to be maintained and accessible? All record-keeping requirements should be documented in the contract with the vendor. What will be required to supply appropriate content, context, and structure of the records before the records are captured in a fixed method? Are there automated tools that can be integrated to provide date of receipt or creation, owner, classification information as the type of information, whether it's a draft, a version, a final official record, a duplicate copy. Maybe it's records categories to link it to the retention schedule and other salient records relating to that same business activity and access restrictions and other metadata that will enhance the retrievability of the records, such as the appropriate and approved keywords found in the organization's official thesaurus. What will be necessary to ensure a smooth transition when the records are migrated to another new system? How will these records be captured so they are fixed? If retention periods for the records change, how will the new retention period be transitioned into the system? How will records be maintained through the retention period? Lots of questions on that one. How will the records be protected from unauthorized access through that retention period? How will the records be protected from unauthorized destruction? If there are plans to move records nearline and offline, what protocols will be built in to ensure that the media is refreshed and the bit error rate is corrected on a regular basis? What indexing systems will be used to ensure the records are accessible? What migration strategies will be in place to regularly replace the media and refresh the data? What migration strategies will be used to convert the records without loss or corruption to the next version or another system? What will the backup strategy used for the system be? How will the strategy provide business continuity, vital records protection? Vital records are those records that we would need in case of a disaster to resume business or protect the rights of our stakeholders. That's what a vital record is. How will the strategy provide for the reliability and integrity of the records should a server crash or if a security violation occurs? How will the strategy provide for times when the system is down? How will the records be available? How will new records be captured? How will captured records be put into the system after it is back up and running? How will the strategy provide for the deletion of records once their retention period has lapsed or even on backup media? What about when there are legal holds? How will those records be protected from being deleted? What records will need to be created for audit purposes within the new system? Will the system need to record or who captured, retrieved, or deleted records and when? Will the organization want to delete all associated metadata when the records are deleted? And if not, what will need to be retained and for how long? How will records be protected from deletion when there's a hold on destruction? That records freeze that we talked about. How will the records with the permanent retention be preserved and accessible over time and, like I said before, space? What system documentation will be needed to be created for documenting that record-keeping process? And what training will be provided to users to ensure that they're aware of their record-keeping responsibilities? These are just some of the record-keeping requirements that should be considered when we're designing a new system, when we're acquiring a new system, or we're enhancing a system. And this is not an all-inclusive list, but this is just some of the things that we should think about as we're going about our business. And together, I think we can do that in a much better, cohesive, and smooth way. So today, what we've talked about is we've talked about those retention periods for those records that are commonly found in the information technology area. We've talked about why keeping everything is really not a good idea. And we've talked about how we can work together to reduce risk and costs for the university. Here are my contact details. I want to thank you for taking some time with me today to discuss these issues. Now I'll take some questions, either audio or chat.
The conference has been unmuted.
Well, if there's no questions, I want to thank you all for your participation. Have a good day.